All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. ScottHorton.org is the website. Got all my interview archives there for you. More than 2,500 going back to 2003. Our first guest on the show today is Thomas C. Mountain. He is the most widely distributed independent journalist in Africa, living and reporting from Eritrea since 2006. His interviews can be seen on RT and Press TV. You can be reached at Thomas C. Mountain. Welcome to the show, Thomas. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Well, good. I'm very happy to have you here. These are the last days of the dictatorship of Meles Zenawi in Ethiopia. Is that right?
Yes. You know, some of your listeners might not be that familiar with what's, you know, just the East Africa in general. We're talking about the Horn of Africa here. It's the east coast of Africa, starting on the Red Sea, going down into the Indian Ocean. It starts in Sudan, south of Egypt, and extends from Eritrea, where I live, to the very tip of the Horn of Africa, with Djibouti, a de facto U.S. colony. South of that, Somalia, and some people consider Kenya to be part of the Horn of Africa. To the interior is Ethiopia. Across the Red Sea is Yemen, which is on the Arabian Peninsula. Now, geopolitically, a lot of people, you know, don't realize how in the last 5 years, the Horn of Africa has become one of the most critically strategic regions in the world. People, especially in the West, don't realize that there's been a major shift in geopolitics. The largest trading partners in the world are no longer Asia and North America. Today, the largest trading partners in the world is Asia and Europe. Now, all of that trade between Asia and Europe, as well as all the westbound energy, the oil and natural gas in the Persian Gulf, has to pass through two critical choke points. The first is the Suez Canal, guarded by a mercenary Egyptian army paid by $1.5 billion every year. And the second strategically critical choke point is the Bab al-Mandeb, the straits between the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean. So in other words, who controls the Red Sea? The Bab al-Mandeb and the Suez Canal controls the major trade in the world between Asia and Europe. Now, you know, this is all taking place in the last 5 years. So if the United States has got the Egyptian military there to take care of Suez Canal, who's taking care of the Bab al-Mandeb and the opening between the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean? Now, U.S. foreign policy is based upon using a local policeman on the beat, a gendarme, a local enforcer to do the dirty work of the United States, and so the United States can hold up its hands and say, look to the world, our hands are clean. Somebody else is doing all these nasty things. Now, the United States uses Colombia and South America as its local policemen on the beat. In West Africa, it's Nigeria. In the Middle East, it's Israel. And in East Africa, it's mainly been Ethiopia. Now, people don't realize that the largest recipient of foreign aid in the world, mainly Western aid, is Ethiopia. Over $7 billion a year is given to Ethiopia in foreign aid, mainly Western aid. That's more than the number two and three ranked aid recipients, Egypt and Israel, and then Egypt combined. So here we have this huge aid recipient, which nobody knows about, which also has, at least numerically, the largest and in inventory, the best equipped army in Africa. Now, this is the U.S. enforcer on the beat. They're the ones that were sent to invade Eritrea in 1998 to 2000, but they were defeated. They were sent by the U.S. to invade Somalia and destroy the first chance, the real first peace in Somalia in 2006, drive the Islamic Union and Islamic courts from power, and throw, you know, southern, central Somalia back into chaos again. Well, and they were defeated, pretty much driven out of Somalia, too. In any case, the head of Ethiopia is one Meles Zenawi, a former Marxist guerrilla who became, through basically murdering all of his potential rivals, the new dictator of Ethiopia in 1991 when the Mengistu, Soviet-backed Mengistu regime, was ousted by the Eritrean rebels. Okay, so you've got a U.S.-supported and funded dictator in power in Ethiopia, somebody that's eliminated all his potential rivals. The United States has built up this big military, but much of the best of the military was destroyed and just wiped out in invading Eritrea in 2000. the Ethiopian government admitted losing 123,000 dead in the six-week period in 2000. That was the best, the cream of their military, 126,000 dead. And then they invaded Somalia and lost another 30,000. So they've supposedly been out of Somalia, but not really. So the Ethiopia has been in pretty, you know, they've lost much of their military. The economy is almost completely aid-dependent. And, you know, they're one of the poorest countries in the world. They've something like 80% of the country doesn't even have electricity. Forget about clean drinking water, hospitals, schools. I think their literacy rate is something over two-thirds. They still have polio in Ethiopia, one of the very few countries in the world. And yet they're receiving $7 billion a year. So what does the U.S. get for that? They get control of the Horn of Africa, where the majority of the world's trade is now passing through. Okay, but Mela Sinawi is now reported to be in a coma. He's been out of action for 2 months. So what does that lead? You know what I'm saying? What do you viewers think is going to happen next?
Well, obviously the CIA is trying to figure out who they're going to put in there next, but I guess you're saying it's going to be really hard for them to keep the state together after he goes because of the way he, you know, weeded out anyone who could have challenged him.
That's right. And see, the thing is, a lot of people don't know that one of the most powerful women in the United States and in the world is also one of the most secret. Her name is Gail Smith. She has an office in the Obama White House. She's the Obama's senior foreign policy advisor on Africa and foreign aid. She was formerly the head of the African Department in the National Security Council of the United States under Bill Clinton, headed by National Security Advisor Anthony Lake, who was Barack Obama's senior foreign policy advisor before the election. And she, Gail Smith, Tony Lake, Susan Rice, and Samantha Powers was this kind of axis of evil within the pre-election outfit of Obama. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, Anthony Lake, who was one time nominated to head the CIA by Bill Clinton and had to withdraw his nomination due to corruption charges, uh-huh. is now executive director of UNICEF.
Well, he's the guy that ran the Somalia war for Clinton back in 1993, right?
Well,
I remember there's a great quote of a father of one of the dead Army Rangers from the Black Hawk Down incident. Says he got a chance to meet Bill Clinton, and he said, so wait a minute, let me get this straight. You had an arrest warrant out for a deed, and you were going to execute it, and that was, you know, my son was sent to go and get him, right? And Bill Clinton says, yeah. And he says, but you also had a peace negotiation open, and you were scheduled to meet with him for some negotiation, right, at the same time? And Bill Clinton says, yeah. And the father says, then why are you sending my son to go and get killed trying to nab a guy that you're trying to have a peace negotiation with? And then this is the father's quote. I'll never forget. It was on PBS Frontline. He says, Bill Clinton looked at me with the most blank look I've ever seen on a man's face. And he said, he kind of murmured, well, I asked Tony Lake the same question. And that was the end of that. Anyway,
that's right.
Fun anecdote.
Now Tony Lake is the head of UNICEF. This is the failed head of CIA. And now he's the head of UNICEF, the largest children's charity aid in the world. Any case, so Gail Smith was Tony Lake's right-hand woman. Now she's sitting in the White House right next to Obama, senior foreign policy advisor not only on Africa but on foreign aid. Gail Smith started her career in the Horn of Africa, supposedly as a journalist. From the late 1970s until 1991, she was, quote-unquote, a journalist in the Horn of Africa. And 3 years later, in 1994, she becomes chief of staff at the U.S. Agency for International Development. From being an award-winning journalist to being the chief operating officer of a multi-billion dollar aid agency in 3 years.
Hey, as long as she has bad policies to recommend, that's a ticket to promotion. I'm sorry we have to hold it right here and go out to this break. We're talking with Thomas Mountain, writing this time for Counterpunch. Ethiopian regime crumbles. Enter CIA. More important East African politics right after this. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. ScottHorton.org is website. Talking with Thomas Mountain from Counterpunch.org. Well, writing this time for Counterpunch.org. Because apparently he writes all over the place. All right, this one is called Ethiopian Regime Crumbles. Enter CIA. So we're talking about Meles Zenawi and, and the American Empire's agenda in East Africa, and he's been our local sock puppet dictator pushing everybody around. Most importantly, as you mentioned, Thomas, the proxy war, the invasion of Somalia in 2006, and now again, I guess, starting late last year. And then I wanted, this is just a detail, one follow-up I wanted to get to real quick about some of the things you said, was did I have it right that you said that the Ethiopian invasion of Eritrea from back in, what, the very early 2000s, that was an American proxy war as well?
Yes, that was, I mean, Ethiopia doesn't, they depend entirely upon Western aid, mainly from the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So if they, how could they pay for this war? They were in the middle, at the time, when they actually physically invaded Eritrea in June of 2000, May and June of 2000, they were in the midst of a big drought and famine. They had millions of people starving. So who's paying for this war? Who's paying for this military? You know what I'm saying? It's all being paid by the West and run by the United States. And it's in this case, what's going on now in Ethiopia is being run out of the Obama White House. I said Clinton White House.
Same difference.
So many of the names are familiar. The Obama White House by a woman named Gail Smith, who started her career in the Horn of Africa as a mistress to a guerrilla fighter in a Marxist-Leninist guerrilla outfit called the Tigray People's Liberation Front. And they were fighting at the time for independence for the Ethiopian province of Tigray, which is on the border of Eritrea. Now, Eritrea ended up driving out the Meles Zenawi regime from power in 91, militarily, literally invaded and captured Addis Ababa and chased Mengistu out, and left, went back to Eritrea, and left, in effect, the de facto control of Ethiopia with the only, competent armed forces, which was this Tigrayan under Meles Zenawi. Now, Meles Zenawi was like handpicked by this woman, Gail Smith, was the CIA's person on the ground in the Horn of Africa, and she ended up pushing him all the way up till he became a G20 statesman. Now, one of the most aid-dependent countries in the world, if not the most aid-dependent countries, is an economically acceptable figure to come in and represent Africa at a G20. Now, the problem is, Meles, like I said, he's been ruthless. He's eliminated all his potential rivals. He knows all too well. He saw the fate of Hosni Mubarak in Egypt, where for 30 years he was a loyal lackey for the United States, and literally overnight the Americans dumped him. Okay, so he knows that the Americans could get rid of him, so he made sure that there wasn't anybody else to replace him. But now he's reported to be in a coma, and he's been out of missing in action for 2 months. Now, the Americans really don't have anybody to replace him. He himself has grown so increasingly paranoid that he's basically turned most of the important decisions in all the Ethiopian ministries of power over to CIA people. The Ethiopians themselves have been complaining bitterly. Some of the elite bureaucrats have been saying, we can't make any decisions. We have to go see the Americans for any important decisions. And Americans have been paying the Ethiopian salary to the Ethiopian army directly now for some years, like they do in South Sudan. Americans pay the South Sudanese army since 2009. They pay the army salaries directly. We found that out from WikiLeaks. And now we've confirmed that the Americans have been paying the Ethiopian army salary directly. In other words, they don't even turn it over to the Ethiopian government. They turn the money directly over to the army officers, okay? So the CIA has been running the country. Meles is in a coma. Who's going to take over? Now, we can't confirm that Meles is in a coma, but what does really give us very strong reason to believe it is the fact that the even Voice of America has announced that the U.S. government is approaching opposition figures in Ethiopia and outside and saying that Meles is quote-unquote sick and that they want to form a transitional government until the next elections in 2015. Now, see, the thing is, Ethiopia is an empire. Basically, it was created in the 1880s by the British and the French because they were worried about the new Italian colonialists were coming into East Africa and taking up what the British and the French had wanted, which was basically Eritrea and Somalia. And the Italians eventually invaded and took Ethiopia. But the British and the French set up Haile Selassie's grandfather, Menelik, as the king of Ethiopia and gave him a whole bunch of people to rule that didn't ever want to be in Ethiopia. For example, about half of Somalia is part of Ethiopia. It's called the Ogaden. And these are people that have been fighting being part of Ethiopia for 100 years, literally armed fighting against the Ethiopian rule. Ethiopia's got people in the West called the Anahuac in the Gambela region sitting on about a billion barrels of oil. There's more oil in the Anahuac region of Ethiopia than there is in South Sudan. Everybody's talking about how much oil there is in South Sudan. So the Anahuac want independence. The people called the Oromo, who actually make up more than half of Ethiopia, over 40 million people, are asking for independence. So you know, Ethiopia is on the verge of actually dismembering and splitting up. And actually several countries are breaking off and forming their own countries. And, you know, the whole world is sitting back that only if they think about Ethiopia as being where people are starving. And, you know, they don't realize that Ethiopia is supposed to be enforcing Pax Americana and the Horn of Africa and protecting Americans' military control. Because America is now a second-rate economic power, okay? China has surpassed America. And the major trading partners in the world is no longer the United States of America and Asia. It's Asia and Europe, okay? So in Europe, headed by Germany, and Asia, headed by China, that's the main trading partners in the world. America can't compete economically anymore with them, but America still has the premier military force. America has to make sure that as long as they've got control militarily of the trade between China and Asia and Europe, America is still the number one superpower in the world. The day the U.S. loses control of that trade route, the Suez Canal and through the Horn of Africa, marks the day that the beginning of the end of the U.S. empire in the world. And who understands this? You know what I'm saying? Well, they think of the Horn of Africa as starving Somalis, starving Ethiopians, pirates in the Indian Ocean. They don't see all this massive geopolitical change that's developed in the last 5 years. So, you know, I'm out here kind of the voice in the wilderness trying to bring that to people's attention, and it's only people like yourself and other, you know, people that are really speaking truth to power in the world that are bringing this, you know, these facts out to the Western media. The American people have no clue that at the very highest levels of the White House, they are aware of the strategic importance of the Horn of Africa, whether you and I are not, you know?
Yeah.
And Obama is turning every day when he comes to work, one of the first persons he sits down and talks to is Gail Smith, his girl, his woman for Africa, right? So,
From time to time, there are things like the L.A. Times had a piece last week or maybe week before last about, really, it added to my knowledge about just, you know, the extent of America's involvement currently there. And I don't just mean money, but actual CIA and JSOC on the ground in great numbers there in Somalia, killing people and directing the killing of people. And so we do have that kind of thing from time to time, but it's just not incorporated into the common narrative. You know, it's not a Jeopardy question. It's not on TV. There's no references to it on everybody's favorite sitcom that, like, well, you know, we're still butchering those whole Somalis or whatever. So the facts are there if you're looking. You can find them from time to time, but
Let me throw something else in the mix here. The American naval base that controls the Persian Gulf and all that strategically critical oil is based in Bahrain. And the Bahrain people are demanding, you know, to get rid of this corrupt and brutal regime that was imposed upon them, right? And the protests are not going away. Now, if the U.S. loses, you know, if the Bahrain regime falls, the Bahrain people know who is supporting that regime is the United States. They want the U.S. military naval base out of Bahrain. Now, if Americans get kicked out of Bahrain, where are they going to go? Where are they going to put their naval base? The backup plan is
Kuwait.
Djibouti in the Horn of Africa.
Uh-huh.
And see, that's why there've been long plans since AFRICOM was first talked about and set up after September 11th in 2001. They never had a place they could really call home. No African country with any strategic importance would allow AFRICOM to come in and set up a base. So, you know, they went to Djibouti, which is what, a little bitty Mickey Mouse country of 500,000 people, and made them an offer they can't refuse, and now the Americans have got a base there. Now, the Americans had a problem with the Eritreans because the Eritrean military controlled the highlands overlooking Djibouti, and the whole new base was potentially a long-range artillery fire of the Eritreans. That shut the whole base down. I wrote an article about this a couple years back. But now there's been a deal worked out where the Americans apparently think they can set their base up there, and they're talking about going ahead with what was originally proposed as a $6 billion military naval facility in Djibouti. And this is, I think, they're going ahead, Crab Lemonnier, which is now 98 acres.
Hold it there for just a second, Thomas. We're about to come up on this next break, and I just want to make sure that I can see if I can keep you for one more segment, because there's still so many more follow-up questions I haven't had a chance to get to yet.
Sure thing.
Okay, now the problem is, too, is we won't be back till 6 minutes after the hour, and it sure is expensive to call Eritrea, however you say it, so I'm going to call you back in about five minutes, if that's all right with you.
Call me back. Okay, no problem.
All right, thanks. So. We'll be right back, everybody, with Thomas Mountain from Counterpunch from Eritrea, right after this. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. ScottHorton.org is my website. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter /Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Thomas Mountain, writing for Counterpunch. Ethiopian regime crumbles. Enter CIA. And so, I forget exactly where we were, but what I want to ask you about, and you can go back to what you want to say, whatever you want to say, but what I wanted to ask here to, you know, I guess go back to was, when you talked about how Ethiopia, of course, was just a fake country drawn by European imperialists in the first place, and that since this dictator, Meles Zenawi, has done so much to strip the government bare of anyone who could possibly depose him, there's not much of it there to live on once he dies, and that you think it's, I think the way you write it in the article, it's basically a sure thing that Ethiopia is going to come apart. And I wonder whether you think there's a chance that that could happen in a relatively peaceful fashion, or is this going to be just a complete bloodbath and nightmare, or what's going to happen when the country finally does come apart? You know, oftentimes people feel like they're stuck on the wrong side of the line from this tribe or that ethnicity, that kind of thing, like in the Balkans, of course.
Well, you know, we're talking about the Horn of Africa, which is kind of a remote, seemingly unimportant place by most, especially American standards, right? So, you know, but like I was saying, that most people don't realize that the major trading shift in the world is taking place, that now Europe and Asia are the number one trading partners, and some 60% or more of the world's trade passes not only through the Suez Canal, but through the Horn of Africa. Meles Zenawi, the president of the prime minister of Ethiopia, was supposed to safeguard that in U.S. interest, and now he's in a coma, reportedly, and what's going to follow up? You know, I'd mentioned that the United States has a problem in Bahrain with their the Bahrain uprising, and the long-term presence of the U.S. naval base, which is, you know, major importance to the United States, controlling the Persian Gulf, is becoming increasingly problematic. What's the U.S. fallback position if they get kicked out of Bahrain? If there's an uprising and the Bahrain regime gets kicked out and the Bahraini people say, U.S., leave Bahrain, where are they going to go? You know what I'm saying? And this whole area of the world is now more important, really, to the United States' interest than what's really going on within the United States. In other words, the U.S. is now a second-rate economic power. Its industry has been gutted and shipped overseas. Now the United States only has their military to control the world. And if they can't control the Horn of Africa, then why should the rest of the world have any fear or respect or pay any homage to the United States at all?
So, well, sure, but I mean, they can send in all the Marines they want. They're not going to be able to hold the state of Ethiopia together if that's what they want.
That's right. It's deep. But the thing is, they're looking at Djibouti right on the tip of the Horn of Africa. Well, right is the word, not the tip of the Horn of Africa, where the Red Sea enters, connects to the Indian Ocean. And they're looking at Djibouti as being their next, their fallback position. You know, they had originally had a $6 billion plan there. Now it seems like they're starting to re-implement that plan. Camp Lemonnier, which is now home to a very active drone base and a lot of death squads and other nasty activity, is scheduled to go from 90 acres to 500 acres with an annual budget running about $300 million a year up to something like $2 billion a year. You know, and it's happening as we speak, right?
Yeah.
Engineers are there looking and seeing if they can build a big naval base there. All kinds of things are going on in the Horn of Africa because it's de facto, whether they say so or not, it's the de facto headquarters for the African command for the United States. And it's the only place they've got. So Ethiopia is basically, Djibouti's basically historically been a province of Ethiopia. Ethiopia's port now, main port where they get 90% of the imports is in Djibouti. So Ethiopia and Djibouti are joined at the hip. The United States wants to build this big base in Djibouti. The Ethiopian president's in a coma. They got no one to replace him. Their army is little more than a militia. It's been pretty much wiped out in invading Eritrea and Somalia. And, you know, the army's run by a remnant of an officer corps that once were loyal to Meles Zenawi. He's purged most of the top people.
Well, and they're in Somalia right now, aren't they?
Well, they've been back and forth in Somalia. There's been some serious fighting recently. They never really left all of Somalia. There's major Ethiopian bases in what's called Puntland.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had articles about how the pirates in Somalia, the Somali pirates, are mainly from Puntland, and they're paying. The reason they've never really been seriously attacked in a consistent way in their home bases and their pirate lairs is because they pay off the Ethiopians, and the Ethiopians tell these international navies, you can't touch these guys because they've paid us off. Mm-hmm. Okay, because how come they haven't gone in? How come there's been not one single drone attack that blown up a pirate den after they've collected their loot? That's a question nobody ever asks. Okay, I'm the only one that's written about this. Any case, there's a lot of there's a lot of things going on the Horn of Africa. A lot of people don't think it's really important, but it's getting to be a crisis now, and it's something they can no longer hide. You know, if Nelson Howie really is in a coma and there's no one to replace him, and the thing is, there is major rebel armies in Ethiopia. That's the next thing I'll be writing about, is about how there is the Ethiopian rebel army threatens regime. There's a major Ethiopian rebel army of some several divisions that's well armed and equipped and about to go and take Addis Ababa and kick the Americans out. But this is going to be a game changer. And like you say, the Americans can't really put enough boots on the ground to ever save Ethiopia. And by the time the remnants of the Melusina regime are kicked out by this rebel army, it'll be too late for the U.S. to get their aircraft carrier fleet, one of the aircraft carrier fleets now, which they are so concerned about with the problems with Iran and the potential closure of the Straits of Hormuz by Iran. They'll have to take some of that naval force and move it to the Horn of Africa. It takes them about a week to get there, to get mobilized and change and get there. By then, this regime change in Ethiopia could take place, and a new independent, nationalist, anti-American government will be in place in Ethiopia, and America is going to be in deep doo-doo. So in any case, you know, that's sort of what's about
to happen.
You're
saying this army has how many men?
Well, at this point, I'm going to write about it, but I'm still confirming certain facts. So I'm just saying is that it's a very large army. I mean, I'm not talking about 5,000.
So you're thinking that when the state falls there, when Zenawi finally dies, if it's true he's in a coma and all that, like they say, his state falls, this will be the new state that replaces him. It won't break apart into warring factions. This will be the new strongman.
The deal in this rebel army is that no, there is going to be, the rebel army is a united front of the different ethnic mm-hmm. groups in Ethiopia.
I see.
And so the deal is that they're all united here together to go in and kick out Melusinawi, and then they're going to go back home and build their own new countries. That's the
deal. I guess that means a little bit of relief for the people of Somalia then, who, you know, the Americans keep paying the Ethiopians
kill. But see, the thing is, right now, the biggest problem Somalia's facing is from the African Union. I mean, it's like 15,000 Ugandan troops there. And see, I'm about to come out with another article about, is Kenya headed for a civil war? Because Kenya's maybe blow up before Ethiopia. Kenya's going to have an election. It's already been postponed once. Kenya's supposed to have the last election, the ethnic violence broke out with a couple thousand dead and hundreds of thousands ethnically cleansed. This next election, they're not going to be killing each other with knives called pangas. They've been buying arms in Somalia, and they're going to be killing. The ethnic warfare is going to explode around the election. And they could end up making Kenya, the highlands part of Kenya, in a civil war. And people don't realize there's a very large, strong, ongoing independence movement on the coast among the Muslim population in Kenya based in Mombasa, who've been marginalized for so many years, and that they're fed up with it all. So, I mean, Kenya is another powder keg about to go off. So, you know, I'm saying is that people think everything's fine because they watch CNN or Fox News. They don't realize that in the real world out here in the Horn of Africa, you know, there's a powder keg here about to go off.
Well, General Ham, the head of AFRICOM, has said before that, hey, you know, Al-Qaeda fighters in Libya and Al-Qaeda-ish fighters in Somalia, why, they're a good enough excuse. Let's pretend that they're the reason we're going to begin intervening in Africa now. And I don't know why this would be any different. You know, let Kenya and Ethiopia fall apart. It's just a great new reason to increase the army presence. Whereas before it was limited more to the Air Force or the Navy. You know, they'll make hay out of it.
They're going to have to put a naval fleet in Djibouti because it's too strategic for the U.S. They can't just let the region fall to real genuine nationalist independent forces, for example, like here in Eritrea. Eritrea won't kneel down to the United States, so the United States has forced sanctions against Eritrea.
Yeah, Hillary threatens them all the time. I'm sorry, we gotta go. I'll go bankrupt.
Okay,
talk any longer. Thomas C. Mountain, counterpunch.org. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Take care. Ciao.